Tango Tango Papa 1922, September 7, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you the second day in a row. What's something must be wrong for with the podcast. From this time, I'm near Marquette, Michigan, which for some reason I was thinking that Marquette, Michigan was probably over in the middle part of Michigan, maybe over by Detroit, or maybe in between Detroit and Kalamazoo or someplace like that, or Lansing. Well, it turns out that Marquette, Michigan is actually in the, I guess they call it the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And so if you look at it on a map, it is about almost as far north in Michigan as you can possibly go in the Upper Peninsula. But if you look at it on the map, without looking at state borders, you would probably think that it's part of far northern Wisconsin, but it's actually, you cross, if you keep going north in Wisconsin, you cross into the Upper Peninsula of, it's the upper part of Michigan anyway. I don't know if it's not really a peninsula, because it's part of the same landmass that makes up, so it's not really the upper peninsula. I think that's a different area, but it's the upper, really upper part of Michigan. Michigan, if you look at Michigan, it's kind of it has more than one part to it for whatever reason. I don't know what the, I guess I need to watch the episode. There's some TV show that was on that you can get streaming now. It was called How States Got Their Borders or something similar to that. Probably need to look up the episode and find out how Michigan got its borders. How did that happen? That would probably be interesting. So anyway, I unload. This is kind of a sparsely populated area compared to Wisconsin or most of Wisconsin or other parts of Michigan. But in any case, unload here in the morning at 7 a.m., and I'm very close to the place where I'm going to be unloading at. It's a small food company, but they don't have any, according to my Qualcomm, there's no overnight parking allowed there, but there is this little tiny fuel stop that's got a little bit of truck parking. So I was able to, I'm the only truck parked in here at the moment, apart from some sort of a utility truck that's, looks like it might be a tree trimming thing with a trailer on it or something. Some sort of utility vehicles parked in here, but otherwise I'm the only truck. It's about 6:30 in the evening Central Time, so the Eastern Time Zone, which I believe I'm in, 7:24 rather. So load unloads at 7 a.m. in the morning. I've got a little bit of feedback on the last podcast, a little email feedback. So, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about stuff. So, I guess before I get into the email, kind of, responding to the brand, because I talked a little bit about brands and Apple and what have you in the last podcast, before I get into that, I was talking in the last podcast about psychotics. People that are psychotic, you know, kind of changing the language a little bit. Because we have the concept of being born in sin. Meaning, another way of putting that is that we're suggestible. We're prone to suggestion. And the more we sin, the more suggestible we come. But along with that, we can kind of move into varying degrees of psychosis. And to be psychotic means to be, to varying degrees, broken, have a broken view of what reality is. The human brain simulates, we have a, if you watch the shows about the brain, human brain sort of simulates, because the human brain is in its, you know, it's kind of in a dark, bony place. And so we have these senses that can kind of connect us to the world. And then we, as the sort of the spiritual part, of, live, inhabit this human body and the, and have access to this human brain computer and its faculties. We, the human brain sort of simulates the world. You have a kind of a simulation of what the world is around us, not only physically, but... also, how things work, how we're able to sort of function together with other human beings. And that part of it, it's one thing to have an idea of what the physical world is around you. So you're able to walk and move and eat and talk and swallow and go to the bathroom and drive your vehicle or whatever it is you do, ride your horse or your whatever it is, or your camel if you're in the right place of the world, or ride your four-wheeler or your motorcycle or whatever it is you do. You've got a sense of the physical world. You've got a sort of a simulation of the physical world that you, that is kind of a shared simulation. You know, other people have similar simulations. But you also have simulations of how things function socially. And that is really where we can go off the rails. And even though we may have a good idea of what the physical world is like, we end up with a broken view, broken idea of... what the reality, basically the spiritual reality of how human beings function. And so we can end up with a unrealistic view of how the world works and what's expected of us, and what, as human beings, what can make us happy as human beings, or more importantly, not necessarily what makes us quote-unquote happy, because real happiness is not an emotion. That may come as a surprise to a lot of people, and but it really is true. There really is no such thing as a happiness feeling. And or a sense of well-being is not really necessarily a feeling. It's not an emotion. It's not a feeling. But you know when it's missing. You know when that sense of well-being is gone. You know it's kind of like your health. You're healthy, and you kind of don't even know that you're healthy. You don't feel healthy. But otherwise, you know when it's missing. And so it's that kind of a thing. And but the more we engage in sin, and then once we engage in sin, and of course we all do, born in sin, we're going to do that. And that, in fact, that's why we're here, to sort of kind of, kind of experience sin and sort of where it leads, find out where it goes. And so we have some experience with it. And then we can be... the whole idea of salvation is to be saved from that. But it's also possible, and most of us end up doing it to really varying degrees, use other people, use the people around us, use the external world around us to in order to build a bridge between ourselves and what we know of as a guilty conscience. That conscience is trying to teach us about the world spiritually. Conscience is trying, that's what really the function of it is to, in a part, you can think of it as it's sort of a mechanism to bring us, to sort of teach us what is right, the sort of the right and the wrong way to live from a spiritual standpoint. Now, when I'm saying spiritual, I'm not talking about some woo-woo type experience. I'm being more practical because you have a physical body, you've got physical world, physical needs, but you've also, the spiritual part is the, you know, you can include in that the mental part. You can include in that motivation, the motivational part, the part that cannot be measured. It cannot be seen, it cannot be measured. Yet it's obviously very important, what motivates us. And so it's possible to misuse the relationship that we have with the world and kind of misdevelop the relationship we have with the world to drive a wedge between ourselves and the very thing that would teach us, the very thing that would teach us about the reality, how to successfully live and function with our brother and sister human beings. How to live together and be civilized and not barbarians. And so we, because we see this as a guilty conscience and we try to run away from it with varying degrees of success, it results in a condition called being psychotic, psychosis. And psychotic simply means that you have a broken view of reality. You may see things that aren't there. Or you may perceive things that aren't there. And that would include concepts about how the world really works. Now the danger is if you get too many people in your society, you're never going to get rid of all of the people that are psychotic. But if you have too many people that are very psychotic and they have a really broken view of how the world really works, how it really functions, and those folks vote, you got big problems. Even if they don't vote, you know, because you're going to end up in a dictatorship. You know, you may pretend like you vote, but you're really not. But nonetheless, we as human beings end up with a government we deserve, whether we like it or not. We may think it's unjust and so on and so forth, but that's just reality. That's just reality. If you don't have self-control and you want to rely on someone else to you know, not only feed and clothe you, but you want to rely on someone else to give you your sense of well-being and kind of lie to you and tell you you're really a wonderful person and you deserve, just because you're a human being, you have this human form, you deserve this and you deserve that, and by golly, we're going to give it to you. And you believe that. You believe the lies that you try to believe the lie that you're really good when you're not. You're psychotic. And so psychotic people are also slaves. It goes hand in hand with slavery. All who sin are slaves, and all who continue to sin and more and more they sin. And of course, when you sin, you don't get away with it. It may appear that you're getting away with it for a time. You may think that because you have all your slimy friends that you've picked, they sin, they share your sin. And you kind of think, well, there's safety in numbers. We all sin together and in our group, and we all kind of rub each other's slimy backs and make ourselves feel good, or try to. That we're going to just be unscathed, and if we all believe the same lie, then everything's going to be fine. No, it's not. Whether you have people lying to you or not, telling you that you're wonderful, but you're really slimy, and your sin, and you're doing this and you're doing that, and you know you shouldn't be, but you do it anyway, then you end up guilty. You end up with a bigger conscience. You end up guilty, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with the larger society around you or how you were raised to do this or how you were raised to do that or this was a sin and that was... It has nothing whatsoever to do with that. Even though people want to believe that it's just, society programmed you to think it's bad to kill your baby, for example. It's really okay. It's really a noble thing to kill your baby. The group that I have around me says so. No, it's not. You kill your baby, you got psychological problems. You're psychotic. And if too many people become psychotic, then at some point you've got large groups of psychopaths. Now, there are always psychopaths. What a psychopath is, someone psychopathic, that means that they've got a break with reality, but they're also violent. So they become psychopathic. Now, I can give you an example of psychopathic groups. One of the biggest that's in the news right now, and it has been for a few months, is this so-called Black Lives Matter. Those folks are psychopathic. They don't have a good view of reality. They're broke. They've got a broken view of reality. They're psychotic, but they're also violent, and they're encouraging other people to be violent. They're cheering those other people on to be violent. And so now you've got news stories around the country where people are just randomly, picking out cops and shooting them just because they've got a cop uniform on, driving a cop car. That's psychopathic behavior. So being psychotic, and allowing psychosis to go on and even encouraging it to go on is not a good thing. And you may think, we can just live and let live and pretend like those people are just crazy and we'll just ignore them. You can't. Psychotic people should be put away. If people are very psychotic, they should be put, we should have mental institutions, and we should, as a society, we should be paying for those mental institutions. We had them until the early 60s. In the United States and Canada, you had under John Kennedy, and then I think Trudeau was the Prime Minister of Canada. During that period of time, that's when, we've got to deinstitutionalize. We can't keep these people held in these asylums against their will. We have to deinstitutionalize. Throw all these crazy people out into the world. Mainstream them. And then, among other things, the psychotic people are used as a battering ram to tear down the rest of the society. Along with many other tactics. At least 50 million, and it's probably more, 55, 60 million, but at least 50 million babies in the United States of America have been aborted since Roe versus Wade was pushed through and by the Supreme Court making a law. Of course, they can't make laws, but they, we're going to make it by interpreting it. It's suddenly legal to kill, it's legal to kill your baby. We've decided. 1973, I believe, is that decision was handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's legal to kill your baby in all 50 states. There's an abortion now that's happening every 30 seconds. A baby is being murdered. So what happens to a country that does that? what happens to any country, whether it's the United States or it's Canada or it's Germany or any of the Western, so-called Western democracies, how are those countries affected by those kind of things happening? They're demoralized. They lose the will to exist. They lose the moral wherewithal. They lose the fight to exist. So what do they do then? This Europe that everybody holds up as, look at Europe, aren't they wonderful? They do this right, and they got their good socialism, and it's all so hunky-dory and wonderful. What's happened? They're being overran right now by what? By barbarians. The barbarians are pouring in by the millions. And the same thing has happened to the United States. The barbarians are just crossing. We've thrown open the borders. Come on in, barbarians. Come on in. You deserve. You're just trying to do better for your family or whatever. Come on in. The hell with our laws. Go ahead and come on in. And there's no end to them. We no longer have the will to have our own countries and to run things our way, or at least to maintain our own territories and to run our societies, because our moral authority is gone. It's been gone because of the abortion thing happening all these years, and there's other reasons as well. But our moral authority is gone. Once you engage in those kind of things and you kind of let those things happen, then you have no stomach to do the right thing and keep, you may have to do the cruel thing and keep people out. If you're looking for a really great podcast, and I don't know if I may have mentioned this before, I can't remember if I did or not. If you're looking for a really, really good podcast, and so far there's 9 episodes. So what you want to do, there's this podcast called, or there's a rabbi, Rabbi Daniel Lappin. And so if you look, you look up the Rabbi Daniel Lappin podcast. And so it's R-A-B-B-I, and then Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, Lappin is L-A-P-I-N. And then podcast. If you look that up, he's actually started up a podcast, and there's about 9 episodes. And I would suggest downloading all of them and or listening to all of them, because they're all excellent. They're 2 hours long. They're kind of broken up into segments. That is really, there's one a week, and so he's been, there's been like 9 weeks so far, but they're all available. Well worth listening to. Really excellent stuff. But that's well worth listening to. But in any case, the reason I mentioned that, he, in this last podcast that he put up, in the past day or two, He gave this excellent thought experiment that sort of helps bring all of this into sharp focus. Let's just imagine, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but just imagine that you're on a lifeboat, and the lifeboat is overloaded, and instead of, you look over the edge, and instead of 2 feet of from the top of the edge of the boat to down to the water, instead of the 2 feet that it should be, it's only an inch. And so your lifeboat is already overloaded, and it's dangerously overloaded. You're in danger of capsizing as it is. But then you suddenly see these people that are, you've got, let's say, 4 or 6 people that are clinging to this door. Some sort of a piece of wood, let's say it's a wooden door or something. They're clinging to this door, and they spot your ship, your life, your overloaded lifeboat, and they start swimming towards your lifeboat. Now, what should you do morally? Now, some people will suggest, we can't let them on, obviously, because as soon as they raise their arm up and try to climb into the lifeboat, it's going to make our lifeboat, we're all going to die. It's going to capsize. So do you let that happen? Some people would say, we'll just all die. You know, it's better that we're all dead. That's not the answer. What would you do? What should you do? What is the moral thing to do in that instance? If you're already in the lifeboat, and you were in there and these other people weren't, what should you do? Should you get a piece of, knock those people and knock them back down in the water? What's the right answer? What should you do? If you want to survive, you're already in the lifeboat. What is your moral obligation? Your moral, if you really think about it, and it's tough, but your moral obligation is to save yourself. Your moral obligation, if you're already in the lifeboat, your moral obligation is to save yourself and the people that are already in the lifeboat. And in fact, you've got more in common with the people in the lifeboat than you do in the water. And so, your country, if you live in, let's say you live in the United States, you live in Canada, or you live in some country like that, your country has a moral obligation to save you as a citizen, to protect your life as a citizen. They've got more of a real moral obligation to protect your life as a citizen than they do to, we're going to let refugees in. We're going to let the barbarians in. And barbarians are limitless. Limitless numbers of them. Never stem the flow of them. So, but he used that as an illustration, and I think it's a great one because it causes, even though it's kind of painful, it's kind of tough, it brings all this stuff into sharp focus, and you have to really think about, what is the right thing to do? What is the right thing to do? And, of course, the right thing to do is to save yourself and to save the people you have the most in common with. So if you're in a country, then you have what do you have in common? Your fellow citizens. But we've lost, as the United States of America, and most, I'd say every Western democracy has lost their moral authority because of abortion and other things. Sort of kowtowing to psychotics. Pretending that wrong is right and right is wrong. Seeing the world backwards. The so-called elite in Western democracies, including the United States and Canada and Germany and elsewhere, they're looking at us. We're just the people in the lifeboat. They look at themselves as being sort of protected. They look at us and they say, let those jobs go. We'll pass. We have this North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and what have you, and we do business with China. We can just let all those manufacturing jobs go. No big deal. Our people are that will survive somehow. We can let those let the borders down and let the barbarians in. We want to be kind. And they're doing so with your life. They're doing so with your livelihoods, in many cases. They're doing so, in many cases, with your territory, your home. Let's say you live in a city somewhere, in particular. Just let them in. Let the barbarians in. And the barbarians, all they're really interested in is getting the goodies. They're not interested in becoming Canadians, or they're not interested in becoming an American and taking on the American way of life. They're not interested in becoming good Germans. They're not interested in becoming citizens of the UK. They bring their barbarian ways with them. What do you think Sharia law is? Barbaric. It's barbarianism. Kill their daughters. Honor killings. It's barbaric. Face of music. And people say, well, we have no right to withhold this stuff from those poor people. Yes, we do. We have an obligation to uphold our own laws. We have an obligation to save ourselves. We have equally an obligation to save succeeding generations. You let in the barbarians, your children and your grandchildren, what kind of life are they going to have? If any life at all. If they even exist at all. Their heads may be chopped off. You may think, well, we deserve because we're overusing the world's resources and all that crap. So that's the equivalent of, well, we'll just let the boat capsize. We all should die. Nobody should live, is the mentality. So anyway, let me see if I can open up Ian's emails here. Let's see here. Ian says, now in response to the brand loyalty thing, cult versus brand loyalty. Ian says, I like to stick with products that have been good to me in the past. Toyota cars have never left me stranded. Apple computers have never given me a virus. Tide soap has cleaned my clothes forever. And that was from Ian. And so not everybody is, you know, that has Apple computers is a kind of cult loyalist. Apple, you know, they, for the most part, they do make pretty good products. And for the most part, you're not going to end up with a virus on your Apple computer. I've never ended up with that kind of a problem on an Apple machine. Now, if I was to, I will say this, if I was to run a scan on this computer that I have right now in front of me, this 13-inch white plastic MacBook running Snow Leopard, if I was to run a like a malware scan, guarantee you I would find all kinds of stuff, but none of it affects Apple. So it is really, these machines, typically OS X installations, are really infected with all kinds of Windows stuff, Windows viruses, but they kind of have an immunity. It's kind of like we are, as human beings, we're mostly immune. If we end up with a virus for a let's say a polar bear or something, just to kind of pull something out of the air, or a virus or a bacteria for a plant that would be, you know, cause plants real trouble. No big deal for us because they don't even affect us at all. And so that's kind of what goes on with the OS X. There's all kinds of Windows stuff that infects these machines, but you never know it unless you scan. So, but Apple, for the most part, Apple does make good products. But, you know, I don't know. I'm probably oversensitive to, I'm very, very sensitive to when I see cult kind of behavior. And I certainly do see it in many of the rabid Apple people, the followers. So it really does exist. And as I was saying in the podcast last night, it exists in other types of products, Harley Davidson motorcycles, KitchenAid in the world of kitchens and appliances, KitchenAid, the mixers in particular. there are people that, you know, those have a like a cult-like status between certain, you know, among certain types of people. And it's just a mixer, but they've managed to do that. It's really quite fascinating. So, but there are all kinds of cult brands, but Apple's been by far the most successful cult brand ever. And furthermore, they've been able to keep, they've had a good long run at keeping it going. Now that, it's sooner or later, they're probably going to end up faltering with that. But, turning on the air conditioner here, it's starting to get a little warm. But, as of right now, they're doing okay. So, but let's see what else Ian says. Oh, Ian sent me a picture of his washing machine. I, by the way, I also have a washing machine problem I need to talk about. Let's see. The other thing, I want to go through this before I talk about my washing machine. Wish list, this is from Ian. Wish list for my iPad mini I would like to see. Number one, he wants to see fast charging. Maybe just sit within 6 feet of a base station and it charges. Getting a full charge in 10 minutes would be nice. I'm sure it would. Charge wire in and out bugs me. Now, the fast charging, they're working on that with wireless, but it fast charging really works best if you have a wired connection. The Note 4 phone that I have has fast wired charging. And the thing is empty and I can plug it in and I can get a 50% charge within 30 minutes. And so that's pretty fast. So within an hour, the thing can be charged. Now that's wired. Now with the Note 5, I think they said that they've improved the speed of the wireless charging, and it's got wireless charging built in. Of course, you have to have the right wireless charging base, which the phone does not come with, and it would still come with a wire. So the wired charging doesn't really bother me. It would be nice if the devices just magically stayed charged, and maybe at some point they'll be able to figure that. There are people that are working on that problem right now. So faster charging, wireless charging. Number two, he says bigger or better battery, maybe completely new technology. And, you know, batteries are trying to improve. That's batteries and wires are kind of the Achilles heel of sort of the bane of electronic devices. And certainly batteries with the modern devices, the batteries they're kind of a nuisance that you have to put up with. And wires. Number three, new camera. He's talking about the rumors for the new iPad mini. I hear the new one has 12 megapixels. Number four, faster processor. That will be coming on these new units. Faster processor is always better. Number five, lighter is always a good thing as long as it doesn't compromise strength and battery life. And that can be a problem. I would rather have a more rigid device with a better battery life, and I don't really care so much about the thing being lighter and thinner. That's just not my priority. I don't mind if it's a little bit clunky if I got great battery life and nice rigidity. So he goes on to say, even without all these 5 points above, I love my iPad mini and carry it everywhere with me. Tomorrow I fly east and we'll have all my podcasts and audiobooks loaded. And that's from Ian, so thank you, Ian. Now, as far as when I was at home, right before I left, the night before I left, I kind of discovered that I was having problems. I realized I was having problems with my washing machine. I've had that washing machine. I bought it at Montgomery Ward. If you remember, that's been a long time ago. Montgomery Ward has been out of business for quite a few years. But Montgomery Ward, I bought this thing at Montgomery Ward at least probably 25 years ago. certainly. Let's see, because I know it's more than 20 years old. So I'd say upwards of 25 years ago is when I bought that washing machine. And it's worked great all those years. Except the other night I noticed that Friday night, you know, of course I left Saturday, but Friday night I noticed that, you know, I was running a load of laundry. And after it went through the wash cycle, the first, you know, where you put the soap in and then it agitates for so many minutes. And it pumps the water out and then, of course, it goes into the spin. And what it did, it just stopped. And it didn't spin. So I restarted it at the spin cycle and then when it got finished, I went on ahead and went to bed, and then the next day I looked at it, and it didn't really spin the clothes as dry as it should have. So there's something wrong with the spin cycle. It's just not spinning very fast. When it did spin, it was just kind of slow. It would go into the slow spin, but not the fast spin to spin the water out. So obviously, it's got a problem. I don't know if it's a transmission problem in the washer. Washers have some sort of transmission in them. If it's a transmission problem, I've always been told, well, you might as well just throw the thing away and get another one. I'm not sure that I like the new ones. The new ones, you know, because of the government regulation, they have all these high efficiency units. And reading the comments, I was looking at Home Depot and Lowe's and even on Amazon, but certainly on Home Depot and Lowe's, I was reading the comments that people were leaving about these high efficiency machines, so-called high efficiency, because they don't use much water. They try to reduce the water usage because of the government regulations demanding that they do, and a lot of people were complaining these things don't work very well. So, should I try to, of course I couldn't do anything at that point because I had to go back to work, but should I try to get another washing machine? Should I try to get that one repaired? Should I see if I can, because there's people that sell used ones, should I try to get a used one that works? Do I want a new one? The other problem with the new ones is that they have this thing that locks, the top locks, while the washer is in progress, while the cycles are in progress. They've got a thing that locks the top closed. Do I really want that? And I don't want front loaders, because those things, I don't particularly, they're very expensive. I know they're kind of a faddish thing. That's another strike against them. They're sort of a fad type of thing, bordering on being a cult kind of thing. And they also end up stinking because the front-loading washers have this rubber seal that ends up with stuff growing in it that stinks. And then you got to take all kinds of precautions to prevent them from stinking. So I don't think I want that. I prefer to have a top loader, but I want to be, you know, there's plenty of times when I'll open the lid and put something else in there after I've started the laundry. Usually after it's running for a while, I'm not going to open it until it's done. But I will open it when the tub is filling with water. I will open it back up and throw, you know, find other towels or a sock here or something here or something there, and a piece of underwear or something, that or a shirt or whatever it is, another pair of jeans or something, and put it in there, add it to the load of laundry that I just started. Well, with these new machines, can't do that. Once it starts, you just have to wait till it's finished. Sorry. I know why they did that. I know why they do that, because you have stupid people that don't watch their kids. So next, they'll probably be coming up with ovens that with locking doors. So you can't open it up until it's done, until the cycle's finished. You might burn yourself. Your kid might burn himself because you're not watching him. So I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. We'll have to wait and see. It's possible that my parents may go ahead and do something about the washing machine. They'll call me before they do, and if they get one, I'll pay them for it. But I think I need to do some more research. I mentioned that to Ian, and he sent me a couple of websites that I could look at. And I prefer to have a washer that has a conventional agitator, if I can, that's with a mechanical timer. Really, what I would like to do is get the one that I have fixed. That would be ideal. Because otherwise it works great. And it has for 25 years. Timer works great. All of the other cycles work fine. It's just that spin that quit working. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. So, anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.